All right.
Blog Talk Radio.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind.
Good morning, and
but find the blue. That's why I come from far away.
Wonderful.
To take away the blues.
Morning.
And I've come to say,
April.
I want to be more than just
all the valuable information that you will be getting this morning. Our first guest this morning is Carol Mulling, and Carol Mullings. Carol is coming to us out of Detroit. And as soon as I just do a little housekeeping here, we are not going to be taking much of her time. We're going to be rock and rolling. And then at 11, I have another friend of mine, Cheryl Burchard, who will be coming out of L.A., and Cheryl will be speaking on how to handle money, avenues to make money in our own businesses, manage credit, and Cheryl will also be talking with us about a financial blueprint. I want to remind the listeners to please take the opportunity to call in. The calling number is 646-915-8166. We love to hear your voice. We want to see you in the chat room. We need your encouragement. And the guests come on, and you know they have a wealth of information, and you're not sure whether or not you will get their undivided attention again. But on the show, you do have their undivided attention. So please call with your questions. And if you type your question in the chat room, too, in case you don't want to make the call, I will read it to her. So go on the site to www.blogtalkradio.com/Daphne-Clark-Hudson. Sign up as a favorite. This way, you will be kept regularly informed and updated of the things we are doing here on the show. Again, I thank you so much. Carol, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be finally hearing your voice.
Oh, and yours too. It's wonderful. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Oh, it's just a wonderful blessing for me. You know, I am just so excited about the direction that social networking is going, because if it was not for that kind of a relationship, you and I would not have met each other.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. Thank God for the internet and modern technology.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I was speaking with someone last night, and I said it is such an awesome thing. No longer do you have to say, oh, I wish this person was in my state or in my city. We could do some work together. But the technology has now leveled the playing field, and everything is at our fingertips. We just need to understand how to embrace this technology to get an effective result.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Carol, would you please take a few minutes and just explain to the listeners before we go in. I know this morning we're going to be talking about employment success in challenging times. We're going to talk about job search and all of that. But before we go into the meat of why you're here, would you please give the listeners a little insight on how Carol's journey all started?
Okay. Well, for the past 20-some years, I haven't kept count of them exactly, but it's been a lot of years. I think since somewhere in the middle 80s, I have been involved in a career transition.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it's interesting how we go places on our path.
Yes.
I was employed as a human resource director of a company.
Mm-hmm.
who had a lot of space, had a beautiful,
yes,
conference area, and they used to rent out the space to this career transition company when they,
yes,
needed to borrow a conference room.
Yes.
And sometimes the people that they were supposed to meet with, people who were being transitioned out of their jobs, didn't show up, or they were late. And I would just chit-chat with the people who were doing the work because I had,
right,
never heard of career transition, outplacement, that kind of stuff back in,
yes,
the middle 80s.
Yes.
And they said, well, one day, one of them said to me, Carol, you should do this kind of work. And I said, but I don't know anything about it. He says, oh, we'll teach you. And they taught me. And ironically, the company that I was working with started going through a lot of challenges.
Yes.
And I had a dispute with the president, I'm sorry, the managing director of that company.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself going through the program with,
mm-hmm,
the same people that I had been chatting with. And,
yes,
I went through their program and got my life back on track and went out in the work field.
Yes.
And one of the things this company offered was lifetime readjustments to your resume if you need it, or if you needed a tune-up.
Yes.
And so about 4 or 5 years later, I went to them to get my resume updated. And just sitting there chatting with them, and the president of that company came out and said, you know, maybe you'd like to come work with us. And I said, tell me more. And long story short, I ended up working for them, and I became one of the first minority females in the nation to do that type of work. And they afforded me opportunities to do sales and marketing with the Fortune 500 all over the nation. And as a result, when they needed to fill the minority,
yes,
requirement,
yes,
the president would say, Carol, you're good at this. Would you like to try your hand at doing this particular function? Do a workshop here or do this counseling. And I said, I haven't been trained. He says, you know what to do, just go do it. And that's how I learned. That's how I learned and got into the business. And I've traveled this country a lot over the years till I got burned out.
Isn't that amazing, Carol, how God prepares us?
Yeah, you just never know.
We,
you know,
never know when and where the knowledge that we acquire will be used. But God sees the end from the beginning. And
exactly.
He supplies us and prepares us for when the time arises.
Exactly.
Because,
so, you know, when I look back in retrospect, I would have never,
yes,
known that a casual,
yeah,
conversation with some people would lead to a whole new career.
Exactly. And this is
it's
why
all part of the master's plan. Uh-huh.
Relationships are so important.
Very.
We start them, and we need to maintain and nurture them because we never know when we will need to utilize them.
That's right. You never know.
You
I
know,
believe
what an
the universe
story.
Is on purpose.
Exactly. And this is why. Obedience. It is
absolutely
so important.
Yes,
you
it
know,
is.
When you are placed in a situation, learn what you can for that time you are there, because whether you know it or not, you will need the experience from that situation when the time arises. And
yes,
thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome.
For sharing this experience, because I know there is somebody out there that this will be beneficial too. So, now with the listeners hearing that, now you know why you turn the dial this morning or click your mouse this morning to the show, because Carol has the information you need to advance your future in this time. You know, you probably are looking at this as a time of crisis, but this is a time of opportunity, because if this did not happen, whatever happens to you did not happen, you would not be listening to this show this morning. And who knows, years down the road, you will be on a show telling your story, how this show and Carol turned your life around. So, Carol, employment success in challenging times.
You know,
where do we begin?
Well, I'd like to send you some energy for that cough. Healing.
Thank
energy.
You. So
much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
When people are going sort of directionless and don't know what to do next, and all they know is what they've done.
Yes.
I give them an exercise to start with. And mm-hmm. It is so very simple that I have had some really left-brain people look at me like I was crazy. But yeah, and I encourage them to do it, and they come back, and they say, wow, that worked. And I mean very left-brain people, like scientists are very left-brain people.
Yeah,
you know, they're very facts. You know, if it's not a tangible fact, then they don't believe it. But
right.
Anyway, fortunately for me in that particular situation, I encouraged them enough that they tried. I said, well, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
That's
and this
right.
Very, very simple, very, very simple exercise is to give yourself an hour or two in a quiet space. May not need an hour, may only need 30 minutes, but clear of at least an hour of space all by yourself, uninterrupted, no phone, television, family, dogs, nothing. Just space. And then get yourself a legal pad and a pen or a pencil, whatever your preference is.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be your own hand, not the computer.
Because
it has to come through you, your hand.
That's right.
And And to me, my higher power, I call God.
Yes.
There are many names for God. So I encourage, and I talk to people from all different paths, different spiritual paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, whatever it is you call that higher power of yours, right.
That's
across
right.
The top of a page. I said, for me, I would say, God guides my hand. And I'd write that down across the top. And then the next thing I would write is a question. What is the best career for me now?
Mm-hmm.
Or what is the best job for me now? And I have my hand, my pen in my hand, and I let it write. And I don't stop and question it. I just let the information flow.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can just flow and flow and flow and flow. I remember the first time I was taught to do this, I thought it was hokey. But I thought, hey, let's see where it takes me. And
that's
I went
right.
home after work, and I sat down. I figured, oh, okay, I'll give it 20 minutes. And I started writing, and I was trying to prepare my dinner. And I was doing a stir fry. And I had to set that stir fry aside because I wrote for about 20 minutes, and good and stuff was coming out. I thought, this is great. And I thought, well, I got to fix this dinner. And I went over to the stove to start doing my stir fry, and I kept being drawn back to that pad of paper.
Yes.
3 hours later, I had a whole criteria of what to do because you don't read it until you're done.
Exactly.
And you look back and go, whoa, how can I do that? So that's the next question. You're like, how do I do this? And you
right.
just listen to that still small voice that's in your inner knower, and it will tell you, and you don't question it because, for example, one of my favorite examples is the Wright brothers in the airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you can take Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell, any of them, they received a divine idea.
That's right.
And that's what comes out on that piece of paper. It's a divine idea that you receive. And no, nobody's never heard of it before. No, it's never been done before because it was given to you to do.
It's your calling and your purpose.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. Your calling and your purpose, and you are supposed to say, how do I do this? Show me.
Yes,
now, that
Lord.
Sounds so simplistic. It sounds, and it is just that simple. Now, it's going to take some work and some other people to do, but once you made up your mind that, yes,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do this, there is no power on earth greater than one made up mind.
Mind.
Now, the universe will send in all the forces to help. You know, it's not a walk in the park because there's going to be some detours and maybe a couple of three hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
Because along the way, what we in this human state will do is allow other outside influences to influence our thinking instead
That's
of
right.
just getting in that zone and following that guidance. You know, and look at, I marvel at electricity. How many
mm-hmm.
times? How many times did it take Thomas Edison before he got it right? And that reporter that asked him, how did it feel to fail over 1,500 or whatever it was times? And he said, I didn't fail. I found that many
I
ways
learned.
That it didn't work.
It did not work. But
yeah,
you know, Carol, in our line of work, how often do we find clients who look on the process and think it is too simple to work? And this is what
yes.
holds them back.
Yes.
You work with them to point them into their God-given divine potential and calling and purpose. And, oh, no, it can't be that. It's too simple.
Exactly.
And purpose and calling is simple. And this all we need to do is to follow. God give us the idea. Step out with that idea. And as you take action, He's going to reveal more and more to you, and He's
exactly.
going to put people in your path to help you to fulfill this,
exactly.
to collaborate with you.
To cooperate with you, exactly. And you know what the thing of it is that if you question it, you know, you sabotage yourself. You sabotage
exactly.
yourself.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's a timely conversation.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the very first things that I do. Now, I have an individual that I'm working with now. He has white hair. I call it silver. I don't like to call it gray because I have a lot of it too. And he has beautiful silver hair on his head. He's 56 years of age. And he says, you know, I go to look for work and people look at my gray hair and they say he's too old. And I said, well, what kind of work do you want to do? Well, he's not a professional person. He was just, he's what you would call just a good worker. He used to
yeah.
drive a bus for the bus company. And
mm-hmm.
he wants some work. And he says, there's
mm-hmm.
nobody hiring. I've been everywhere. Things are bad. Oh, my gosh. So I sat and took him through a process of
mm-hmm.
And showing him some possibilities. And this is the thing. What I constantly heard come out of his mouth was why it cannot work. And this is how we sabotage ourselves. We
exactly.
receive this spark of a divine idea,
mm-hmm.
and our human mind, not our spiritual mind, the human mind will say, that doesn't work. That'll never
mm-hmm.
happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're too old to do
mm-hmm.
that. But
mm-hmm.
you see, we have to tell that mind, thank you for sharing. Now go away. I'm listening to
exactly.
my divine mind.
Exactly, because you are not in control of my destiny. And,
exactly.
and people don't understand that voice that they're hearing is all the programming from they were tiny kids, from their parents gave birth to them in that hospital.
That's
Those
right.
are all the negative chatter that they've been hearing, and they need to affirm those away and know who is in charge. Because
exactly.
God created us, and everything that He need, that we need to fulfill our calling and purpose is already there in the universe for us.
It is. It's like what you just said reminded me of the book that Wayne Dyer wrote some years ago, that
mm-hmm.
that you will see it when you believe it.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And our culture wants us to see it first, but you know, you have to believe it first.
You have to believe it first.
Yes.
When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. It's like an opportunity. People think opportunities come in and knocking. Opportunity is always there. We
They're
need to
there.
Recognize it and accept it.
Right. Open the door and let it in.
That's
and
right.
Let it in.
It's always
yeah.
there.
It's always
there.
So I went a step further with this individual, showing him how negative his thinking was, that he allowed the world to jade his thinking. And I went a step further with him. I said, let's see what we can find. So I did some research, and I found some job titles and places that he could go and look for work.
Right.
And it just so happened that one of those places I had to go to have a key made that day.
Yes.
You know, one of those big warehouse home improvement places?
Yeah, like Home Depot and place like that.
Yes.
And
yes.
Lowe's and all that.
Lowe's.
Stuff.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Lowe's.
And I went up to Lowe's and to have a key made. And while the guy was making my key, I just noticed that he looked as though he was at least 70. And I looked around and I saw other people in there, like well above 50. And I said to him, I said, you know, this looks like a company that's not afraid of people who are over 50. He says, no, they love them. They love them. I said, would they be hiring here? He said, are they hiring here? And he said, yeah, they're hiring. They're hiring. He says, matter of fact, they're hiring all over the country. He said, they pay pretty good, too. And I said, good to know. So I passed that information along to this individual, and I said, now, I said, Lowe's is hiring, but their competitor is Home Depot. Go to both of them. Go to both
That's
of them.
Right.
Yeah. So he went to Lowe's and got a job.
Yes.
And now his self-esteem is somewhat restored because, you know, our culture has taught men to be so closely identified with what they do instead of who they are.
And why they are. Why
exactly.
They were created. Because what I heard from this story is that this gentleman was not looking from behind that box steering wheel. That was all he knew, and that was his comfort zone.
His comfort zone.
And anything that would take him from out of that driver's seat was a no-no. It couldn't happen.
And it scares the pants off of people to step out of that comfort zone into the world of possibilities, you know.
And Carol, can you imagine all those many years he worked as a bus driver, the thousands of passengers he had encountered with, if he would harness all of those relationships, he could create a unique business opportunity for himself. But he wasn't there.
No. No.
As
a matter of fact, I encouraged him to go take a ride one day on his old route to see the people that he used to see on his bus route every day, you know, 5 days a week, and just talk to him. Talk to him. I said, but before you go to this office supply store, and I encourage everyone to do this that's out looking for work. Go to the office supply store, get some business cards, get the blank business cards that you can make on the computer. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you put your name, address, and your email address.
Phone number.
And I tell them to put that on there. I said, because you're going to run across people when you're out in the world. And you tell them, you know, do your 90-second commercial, and I teach them how to do a 90-second commercial. This is what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a job. I'm looking for an opportunity. So if you hear of anything,
That's
give me
right.
a call and let me know, and I'll take it from there. And I said, if you do give a person a business card, they're more inclined to keep it. If you jot
That's
your
right.
name and phone number down on a piece of paper, they get lost, thrown away. Oh, what is it? This is trash. And they throw it away, and they totally forget about you. But business cards, people keep. And I said,
exactly.
it's just a visible reminder to the person that they had an interaction with you. So if something comes up, they could say, somebody will say, you know, I need somebody to do such and such a job. And and they'll say, oh, I ran into so-and-so the other week, and he's looking for work. I think he might be a good fit for you. Because, you see, companies hire people that they like. It can be
exactly.
the most credentialed, most experienced, most accomplished person in the world. But if you come across in a way in that interview that they don't like you, they're not going to hire you.
Doesn't matter about your qualification.
Nothing much qualifications, whether they like you or not. And
that's
the qualifier,
right.
primary qualifier.
Right.
And you know
I'm sorry,
I live in Detroit. And Michigan is according to the news reports, has the highest level of unemployment in the nation. And that's because mm-hmm. this whole area here is based on the automotive industry, and then a lot of people are nervous, out of work, and this area has a lot of, you know, a lot of tense and nervous people. And mm-hmm. And I've been doing workshops all over the city, the metro area, in churches mm-hmm. to serve their congregations, and I do it very, very, very inexpensively because I want to serve. But I tell people that I was in New York back in the very early late 80s, 90s, I can't remember when, New York, New Jersey, and they had an unemployment rate of 15 to 18% somewhere in there. And I said, and I was able to help 85% of that organization's people get back to work, me and my team. And they said, how did you do that? And I said, because people are going out the front door, there's other people coming in the back door, and you want to be one of them because they haven't turned out the light. They haven't turned out the light and closed down the city yet. It still has to operate.
You just have
to find new ways of doing things. Get out of the box. Get out of the box. Yeah, so anyway, that exercise of letting your inner knower right through your hand is powerful, mm-hmm. powerful.
It is powerful. It's because Sunday, one of my church sisters just got laid off, and you know the energy and the expression I saw coming out of this woman. Very talented woman, too, and it's not the first this has happened. But the energy that I saw coming out of her, you would think she's not a believer. And I was sitting mm-hmm. directly in front of her after service, and I was kind of giving her some free coaching and pointing her direction. And the expression on her face, she just did not want to hear it. And I just simply said to her, I said, you know, what you send out is what you will receive.
Exactly.
And I said, but one thing, can I ask you one favor? Your son will be graduating high school in a few weeks. And so what I'm hearing from him, his prospect is going to be wonderful. Do not pass this energy you have onto him.
Oh,
just separate that energy from him.
Exactly.
And she was kind of taken back that I say so, but it is the truth.
It is
and
the truth.
And I hope she's listening to the show this morning because
she's
at home. So I hope she's listening, and this will do good for her. You know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I find when talking to supposed faith-filled people, they're very happy about the excited and deep believers in their faith until something goes wrong, and then they don't realize that what they do, they start thinking
mm-hmm.
like the world. Instead, I tell people, that's when your faith, that's when you really get out your spiritual toolbox and use your faith.
That's right. You
that's
know,
what will get you through, not fear.
Yes, my girlfriend said to me last week, this woman and I, we've been friends for a long time, and she's a younger woman than I am. And she looked at me and she said, Daphne, I don't know anybody that have the kind of faith that you have. And she said, this is why I like to be around you, because when I'm around you, I know that it doesn't matter what is happening, it will be okay.
Absolutely.
And I see it. I see it being okay for you. And she said, our friendship and your life story and journey to me is not what I'm reading in the book. I see it happen. You talk the talk, you walk the walk, and I see the result. And
absolutely.
I just appreciate it.
Yeah,
and people
yeah.
think your faith is for when everything is fine. No, it
mm-hmm.
is for when.
Mm-hmm.
It's for when the bottom fall out of the bucket.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's amazing, some of the people that I've talked to who are supposedly so faith-filled, who really
mm-hmm.
are not. They're faith-filled in their talk, but not in their walk. And
that's
I think
right.
what's happening in the world right now is an awesome divine opportunity for us to take a look at us ourselves and how we walk that walk. Are we walking our talk, or are we just talking it? Because too many, I traveled in churches now all over the country,
yes.
and I find a lot of people can talk it, but they can't walk it. They're not walking it because they come to me and they tell me about the challenges and the problems and the trouble, and I'll say, well, how are you handling it? And then you you can read their energy, and read their faces, and you can see the worry. And I said, well, I heard a lady on television once say, why worry when you can pray?
Pray it away.
But you see, but people can't see that. They want to see something they can feel and touch, because our culture, our culture teaches people to be fearful. Look at the media. Look at the media and the swine flu. On our local news this morning, they say the schools are closed because there are, now get this, 46 probable cases. Probable.
Confirmed.
But look at the hysteria that they've built up in the meanwhile. And they've got people scared. And I thought, this is so contrived by man. And I keep praying with my prayer group that this is an illusion. This is a false illusion. This is fear. False evidence appearing as real. It has nothing to do with God. Nothing to do
That's
with
right.
spiritual. Nothing to do with your spiritual walk.
That's right. That's
so
right.
we are praying that God raises the consciousness of people so that they don't let this fear suck them in and bring that disease upon them, because we are the thinkers who think the thoughts that make the things. And we have to stop doing it.
Exactly. Because the fear enters into them and start coming out like the signs and symptoms of what they're reading.
Exactly. And no good thing has ever come of a fearful thought. No good thing. No, you have to believe, because God and fear will not occupy the same space. It's not that it can't. It will not occupy the space of fear. And God wants to bring you good and nothing but good.
That's right. You have to decide which one are you going to allow to accommodate in there. You cannot have them both trying to come true, because it's not going to happen.
No, because we have the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And God will say, okay, if that's what you choose, you go right ahead, go over there, and let it kick you around and knock you down. And
I'm right here when you decide that you need me.
He's just sitting
back there relaxing, waiting, and you come back, and he's not going to be judgmental in any way. His arms will be outstretched, welcoming you back home.
Thing. Yeah, that's our saving grace right there. That's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yes.
There's one other area that I want to... I'm so enjoying my conversation with you.
Yes, we have 27 minutes remaining.
Yeah, I have one other area that is very, very key to people who are looking for work that I want to make sure that gets mentioned. And that area is resumes.
Mm-hmm.
Resumes. I see, it's really easy to go online to look at a source and see how to do a resume. And I look at those sources, and some of them are decent, but what the one big issue I have with those is that they tell people to put an objective on their resume. And the point I want to make is that don't do an objective. Do a you can call it a work summary, a background summary, a career summary, but do a summary of, as a working person, who you are, what you've done, and the outstanding skills that you have. Because companies nowadays don't care what you want. They want to know, what can you do for me? How can you help me improve my company? How can you help improve my bottom line? So when I see those, I scrap them. I don't use them. Because you see, every resume gets the 10-second review. And that is, when it comes before that person, if it doesn't, there's something else too with that, they're going to take a 10-second glance, and they're going to look at the top. And whatever that statement at the top is, whether you call it a career summary, a background summary, a work summary, that's what's going to grab their attention. And then that little statement at the top will also tell them whether they want to look further down on your resume. You can have the most beautiful resume in the world, but if you don't have a good statement at the top, I call them grabber statements, something that grabs the attention, they're not going to read the rest. And it's very important to, one other key thing I encourage people to do with that is that go through job listings on the line in the newspaper, and what you're looking for is information. You look that this job may be way across the country, but what you want is information out of this is the job title that you want. Look in there for the words, the key words that employer says they want. If they want somebody that's organized, somebody that's a producer, somebody who can, a troubleshooter, a good communicator, has good interpersonal skills, I call those the buzzwords. Pick out those words and make sure you use those words in your grabber statement so you can grab that person's attention and get them to look at the rest of that and call you in for an interview in your own area. And that's
awesome.
One of the things that works well. It works real well when people do it.
All right. Carol, we have 24
yes.
minutes. I would like for you, before we continue, I would love for you to tell people about how they can get in touch with you and a couple of your materials that you have that they can purchase. And I don't know if you have any special package for the listeners today. But I get into conversation with my guests. We have such a good time, and we finish, and I didn't let them promote who they were. So.
Oh.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Anyone can reach me by going on my website. It's carolsministries.com, and my name is spelled Carole. So it's Carol's. Caroles ministries.com.
Awesome.
But you can Google my name, Carol Mullins, CaroleMullins, and that'll also lead you to it.
Yeah.
I'm out there a few times. There's a lot of Carol Mullins, but if you read through it, you'll find it.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that too when I had just met you on speaker site. I said, ooh, I was thinking my name was bad, but I said, Carol, hit me, man.
Okay.
Any books you want to mention?
I'm sorry?
Any books you want to mention? Do you have any
I have a lot of
to...
I On my website, I'm sorry. I forgot to answer that part. On my website, there is a tab where people can take a look at the books that I've written, the ones that I'm writing. I've written a book of prayers, everyday prayers. A little small pocket book. It's designed to go in your pocket, your purse, or your briefcase, or just in your back pocket, or in your jacket pocket, to get you through the day. When something comes up, and you just open it up, and within 2 minutes, you could read a prayer that'll bring you back to your spiritual center and give you some spiritual food that gives you the strength to get through whatever it is. I have also CDs that are available for sale. Oh, and the other books, some are in the process of being published. Hopefully I'll get it done quickly. And meditation tapes and tapes of other talks that I've done when I've appeared around the country in other workshops. But there's a tab they can go to. There's also a tab that they can go to contact me. Some people they ask for prayer. Some people call in for little tips. And it's all right there on the website.
Awesome. So I won't have to beat myself up after this interview because I gave you the opportunity to do that part.
Yes, thank you so much. I so appreciate that.
You are very, very, very welcome, my sister. I think we're going to have to talk about how to get you to come to Connecticut. You've been to New Jersey. You've been to New York. We're going to have to get the sister to come up to Connecticut.
Yes, I have yet to visit Connecticut. I would love to come up there. We'll have to mastermind that and see it happen.
Oh yeah, we have to talk about that. I can just see us both rocking the house.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have to.
Nothing
talk about
brings
that.
Me greater joy.
All right. Okay, so we spoke about that activity that can help us all to focus on where God wants us to be, and although it is a simple exercise, we want everyone to practice that. So we want you to keep going back to the on demand to listen to that. Carol mentioned about how to let your resume stand out above your competition.
Yes.
All right, where do you want to continue here? We have 20 minutes remaining.
How to present yourself.
Yes.
How to present yourself. I watch a lot of the news shows, you know, the national news shows, CNN, MSNBC, and a lot of them. And a lot of them show job fairs in action. And I look at some of the clothing people are wearing, and I just want to go through the screen and help them out.
Mm.
You know, there's
certain colors
you don't wear. There's certain colors you just don't wear on a job interview. And you don't wear red, you don't wear brown, and you don't wear green. Those are the primary, and definitely do your best to not wear black. And let me tell you why.
No black.
No,
because no brown.
Black, no green. And I'll briefly tell you without going into great description, but I'll give you enough so your listeners can understand. Black.
Okay.
Black, the color black. Okay. This is the thing. You can never have a second chance at making a first impression.
Amen.
Okay. And when someone meets you, they give you the glance, and we do this. It's just a human thing to do. We glance at you up and down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we make an opinion in our minds, whether we realize it or not, but we're making a judgment about how you look at who you probably are.
Right.
That's even before you've opened your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to present yourself in an appearance and in colors that say, I'm a likable person, I'm a good employee, I'm a lawyer, whatever you want to convey.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're standing there in colors that don't support that, you're not going to be successful. And
that's
I tell
right.
people, it may sound trite to them, but it works because I've had over 25 years doing this and helping people.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people who didn't want to do it and had negative results, and people who did it and had great positive results. But you don't wear black because black says you're inflexible. You're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You're stuck in old ways of thinking or in your way of thinking. You don't do that. You want to be a team player. You want to be open and receptive to whatever they want you to do, how they want you to do it, if that's where you want to go work. Black says, you are so closed down.
That's right.
Green,
that's
the color green. And this goes for any shade of green. I know some of the khaki greens and sage and the bright greens, they're very pretty. And forest green is gorgeous and emerald green. No, no, no.
Not for interview.
Just in this situation, interview or if you go to a job fair. Because that green says you're sneaky and you might steal. Okay.
Oh, green says you're sticky and you might steal?
Exactly.
Woo, Lord.
That's the subliminal message that it sends.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do that. You don't wear brown. And that goes for cream color, taupe, light brown, dark brown, no shade of brown. Brown says you are a wimp noodle. You have no leadership ability. Somebody can take you by the nose and take you anywhere, and it could be totally not you. But this is what the color is saying. This is the subliminal message it's sending. Don't do that. Okay? The other color, this is mostly for females now, red.
Mm-hmm.
Do not wear red, except if you're going to wear a red scarf. You know, little guys can wear a dark red tie, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I love red. I look fabulous in red. And I know the brighter the red, the brighter the red, the better. But I don't wear
it. We are going to be good together. Lord, help us.
Yes, but in an interview or a job fair situation. What did it say?
I can say the same thing for my purple. I am just so gorgeous in purple.
Yes.
Royalty.
Oh, yes. Yes, and you can't wear that one either.
I stick to my pinstripe and my navy blue, so I'm waiting
navy blue.
To hear what.
Right.
Huh?
But what color was I on? Red. Red.
Yes.
Red says that you are very excitable.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a temper, and if you mess with them, they may go postal on you. Okay. And that's not what you want to say. That's not what you want to say. Now, in certain situations, as speakers like you and I are, we can go and do a talk in red because in that situation, it represents power. In that situation, purple represents royalty, power of the spoken word. And red represents love, but not in an interview situation.
That's
okay?
Right.
And for women, never wear any pastel color. Never, because it says, you know, you may be competing with men for a particular situation, and you want them to see you as the professional that you are, or as the hard worker that you are, not a woman. You know, you want that to be genderless. So you leave the pastels at home. The best, absolute best colors to wear, white, navy blue, white, and charcoal gray. With a touch of red. For guys, a dark red tie, and for women, you can forget the red, unless you want to just put a little scarf around or something, but I would skip the red altogether. And those are the primary colors, because the red, white, and blue, you know, I'm honest, I'm loyal, I'll do a good job, I'm dedicated. It sends all the right subliminal messages. And then when you open your mouth and talk to them, they're more apt to like you, and you will appeal to them more so. So that's the other thing I really wanted to get in.
Yes.
I see these kids out here in some of these job interviews and these job fairs, they have on gym shoes. That's a big no.
They have on what?
Gym shoes.
What do they
tennis
have on?
Shoes. Tennis shoes, gym shoes. They're Adidas and they're Reeboks and Nikes. And that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
You always
put a week ago, I was having a similar conversation with another woman at church. She just finished college and looking for a job. And she said, I've never looked for a job in how many years. And I'm giving her some tips and everything. Oh, but I like my this and I like my that. I said, okay, well then, hey. Don't be asking me no question if you like everything you already have. You're not going to open up for improvement.
That's right.
And that
That's
was
right.
one of the same things she was talking about. But I have to do a long walk and I have to be in my tennis shoes. I said, no, it don't work like that.
Take your other shoes in the bag and change when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a long walk to work.
Yes.
You always, when you're presenting yourself for in a job fair or at a job interview, you always dress one step above the position that you want. Like if it's a factory job or something like that. For example, let me give you an example. My son, when he was in his last year of high school, one of my requirements once he got in high school was that he have a job, a little part-time job somewhere. That to teach him how to handle money, a little discipline, and give him some independence. And I taught him how to dress to go for an interview. Well, for Christmas one year, I gave him some really beautiful sweaters with nice patterns on. One was black and white, and one was red and white. And he's like his mother. He looks great in red. And
he looks like his mama, too?
Yeah, no, he looks like his father.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Kenny, you can't even tell he's my child from looking at him. But anyway, and I bought him nice turtlenecks to go up under the sweaters. And he looked very sharp.
Right.
And some nice dress slacks. And so I told him to go look for work. And he called me at work in the afternoon. He says, Mom, I'm so disappointed. I've been to 5 places, and all of them turned me down. And I immediately said, what did you wear? Well, I wore that red sweater you gave me and my jeans my gym shoes. And I said, oh, no, you didn't. He said, yeah, I did. I said, okay, this is what we're going to do tomorrow. You press that white dress shirt you've got. You don't have to put on a tie, but I encourage you to put on a tie. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. But you put on that white shirt. You put on those dress pants. You put on your Sunday go to meet and shoot dress shoes.
Right.
And you go back to those same places.
Same job.
And see what happens. And as God is my witness, he went back to those places the next day, dressed. He put the tie on, and just a shirt and tie and his little jacket. He thank God he had a navy blue jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me at work. He was so excited. Mom, I went to 5 places, and I got 3 job offers.
That's
he said,
right.
You were right.
That's right.
Yeah, and I said, it works. If you work it, but if you don't work it, it's not going to work for you.
But, you know, it's funny because my son, I was laughing when you say that because my son is the same thing. He said, oh, Mom, every time you talk to me, you have to treat me like a client. I said, well, you're getting information for free and everybody's got to pay. So what he did, because it's coming from his mother, and they
yeah.
cannot see you as their mother coaching them and everything like that.
That's
you
right.
know,
That's
it's
right.
amazing, Carol, how time go by. We only got 10 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. This has been so wonderful.
You're going to have both episodes, girl. I mean, one segment can do for you and I. You need to go two episodes.
Yes.
So,
well,
you have 9 minutes. Would you please gather your closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts are that we are all divine beings of God, brought here with divine purposes. Whether or not you believe in God or not, there is a higher power. You believe in something, that there's a force out there
yes.
that works for you, or in some cases people believe it works against them, but it's really just your own lower nature that's working against
yes.
you. And that yes. when you step out on faith, the net will appear. It's not
that's
it's
right.
not like instant coffee, instant food. You know, you
mm-hmm.
you have to do your part, and the net will be there for you. And sometimes
yes.
even the lowliest of person, the most unbelieving person, can get help. There's two beautiful, beautiful words that we were given that work so often. It is, God, help me. Help me.
God, help me. Yes. Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes.
And no matter
yes.
what we are going through right now, and there's a lot of people going through worry about their homes, worry about, you know, food, worry about jobs, worry, worry, worry. But worry doesn't serve you. God does. See, I know what it's like to lose your home. I know what it's like to not have transportation. I know what it's like to have everybody in the world look at me cockeyed and say, what is she doing? And I said, I'm walking in faith. And those same
That's
people,
right.
those same people that look down their nose at me like, what is she doing? Is she crazy? And you know what? They marvel at when they see the blessings, the magnificent blessings that come forth into my life. You know, a beautiful home, transportation, money, opportunities. You know, it's not where it's going to be, but thank God I'm not where I was. So I have lots of testimony because I've been there. I've been there.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you.
So that's basically the end of my story.
You know, Carol,
did you have any other questions?
You still have 7 minutes, and what I'm going to do, because the next guest has not called in yet, I'm going to continue our conversation. I know I asked for closing summary and all of that, but you still have 7 minutes, and we will continue until Cheryl calls in, because there's no sense in giving up valued conversation until somebody else comes. So it's just an amazing conversation we are having here. I know the listeners are so blessed.
Yes.
Because
yes.
you give them such an awesome plan to go out there and make it happen for them.
Yes. What popped into my head as you were talking are some of the phrases that I use to get me through tough times when it looks like the world is standing on my neck, you know, won't let me up. And I use phrases like, this too shall pass.
This came
to pass, and as soon as I learn this, it will go away.
That's
and
right.
Better is on its way to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say fake, F-A-K-E, fake it until you make it.
Make it, yes.
But I don't
yes.
believe that. But about the past 25 years, I have been saying faith it, F-A-I-T-H, faith it until you
faith
make it.
Faith it, yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Believe in that power that believes in you even when you can't believe in it yourself.
Exactly, because when we are walking and operating in our divine calling and purpose, there's no reason
yes.
to be fake. Because we are already real.
That's right.
It's just listen for clarity, still ourselves long enough to listen to the Maker, the next
yes.
instruction that He's telling us what to do. And when we do that, we won't need to fake anything.
That's true.
Because we are the real thing. We are authentic. We are not carbon copies.
Absolutely. I think the most powerful tools we have are prayer, meditation, and to do the work. I call it the spiritual toolbox, where you pray.
Mm-hmm.
Pray is talking
mm-hmm.
to God. Meditation is stilling mm-hmm. yourself to be still and know, to sit and listen to all the good stuff that's
right.
coming, because God is constantly speaking to us in our spirits. And we have to
that's
shut
right.
the chatter of the world long enough to be able to hear it. And it's
right.
not the easiest
and
thing to do at first. You know, it's not easy, but it takes practice.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Carl, a lot of times when I do like a 3-day weekend retreat,
mm-hmm.
and I love to incorporate quiet activities in that weekend.
Yes.
And adult folks are losing their minds because
uh-huh.
they are not accustomed to be still. And there are some people who are really into the activity and doing what they're supposed to do, and then there are others. And I'm talking about professional people
oh,
who
absolutely.
Are going over trying to make a conversation with them. And I start off with like 20 minutes, and then by Sunday before we leave, I'll be up to maybe an hour or something. And people are losing their minds.
Yes. But that's the best thing to lose, to lose that human mind and let God take over that space, to improve
mm-hmm.
it, to take them to higher levels. You know,
exactly.
I love doing retreats too, and I always incorporate
oh,
some quiet
oh,
time. It's necessary. It's necessary.
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah,
it
to
is.
Begin
it
to is. Begin and end your day that way is just so extraordinarily necessary. It is
mm-hmm.
necessary. And, you know, our world
mm-hmm.
teaches us to fill the space with noise of televisions, radios, iPods,
mm-hmm.
MP3 players, you know, chatter, chatter, chatter. But you
mm-hmm.
still got to, and some of the ways that I like to do retreats, not I don't always get the opportunity to, but do them at retreat centers where there's some grounds that people can walk.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you know,
yes.
we.
And do walking meditations and in silence and just enjoying the nature and being aware of all of the things that around us that are God in expression.
You know, the first time I communicated with you on speaker side,
mm-hmm.
the Spirit said to me, Carol, and I have to confess now, the Spirit said to me, you and Carol need to do a retreat at Wisdom House. I want you to look up on the website for Wisdom House. It's up here in Litchfield County.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I didn't say anything to you yet, but it is such a powerful place. They have such an awesome campus.
Ooh.
And it's beautiful in spring, all the seasons, but my favorite season to be there is fall and spring.
Oh, yes. Those are my two favorite seasons when things are blooming.
Yeah. Oh, that is
yeah.
such an awesome, it's an awesome place. So, look it up on the website. We will talk about it just so you can
yes.
see the different pictures on there. It's just
that's
an
awesome.
Amazing. Cheryl still has
that
not called in yet. So did you have more things on your list you wanted to talk about?
No, because I figured out an hour, and we've just concluded
right.
an hour, but we can keep going. In job
yeah,
search,
yes.
are there any questions that you have for me in terms of job search?
In job search, you covered, because one of my pet peeves was really the way people dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And the resume, I like the pointers that you gave there. And the length, what is your recommended length of resumes? Because you hear one page, you hear 1.5 page. This my friend was telling me that her daughter had a 5-page resume. I said, "Oh, please, ain't nobody
reading
that."
No, that's too much.
What's your recommendation, Carol?
Two pages, and you got to get it cut down because right now the reason at one time one page was necessary. However,
yes.
in our current environment. There are people
mm-hmm.
who have a lot of working experience who are finding themselves without work. And they have a lot of
right.
good experience. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
that experience is varied, and I teach them to do a functional resume where you focus on the things that you've done and those accomplishments, as opposed to your job duties and what you did. And, you know, there's some words that you never use on resumes, like responsible.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pet peeve of mine. Responsible for yada, yada, yada. Well, no, you're not responsible. That's what you were told to do. What did you actually do? Use action words. Use action words. You know, did you supervise, provide? Did you develop? Did you design? Did you know, use words like that. Then we call those action words that show what you actually did. And that's a word that you never, never, never use as responsible for. When I see it, I teach people to strike that word. Because if you strike that word, they say responsible for maintaining the tool shed. Well, just say maintain the tool shed. Don't say responsible for. And that's that's one of the things that you don't do. But there are sources on the internet where you can go and find action words that are that really show what did you do. Oh, you know the other thing about resumes, all those 5 pages.
Right.
You have to cut all this stuff down. Don't talk about what you did 30 years ago.
That's
talk about what you did in the past.
Out.
Yeah, look, exactly. Use the experience of the past 20 years. Focus on that. Because 30 years ago, you may have been flipping burgers at McDonald's. You know, it is part of your work experience, but it is not relevant. Your resume should speak to and be relevant to the skills, experiences, and the accomplishments that are in alignment with the job that you're seeking.
And
so
how it's going to add value to the position you're looking to get right now.
Exactly.
Now, Carol, what's your take on your recommendations, references rather? Should you include those on your resume, or you should supply those when you are called for an interview?
You never, never, ever include references as resumes. Okay?
Right.
Never, never, never. You always have your list of 3 to 5 of people that, and in gaining those references, you talk to those people and get their permission, and you give them, you provide to them a little cue card of the areas you want them to cover. Because
this person
may know you professionally, but they also may know you socially. And you don't want them to mention that social stuff, because you may get very relaxed with this person. So you tell them the areas you know, the areas that you can look it up and teach yourself.
That's right.
The areas that they're going to ask about. So make sure they're schooled in those areas. But always have that available. Now, having said that, if a company ask during the course of the interview, ask for your references. That can often be a clue that they're interested in you. Now there's some that ask for you to include it just in general. But you never give a reference sheet unless it's being asked for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never do that.
Why do we still have time? I don't. Miss Cheryl Bouchard, would you call in? I don't know. I mean, LA's on a different time from us, but come on, girlfriend. You need to call in. Do you have any insight pertaining to cover letters for the listeners?
Yes. One size does not fit all. One size does Some people call me and ask me, they say, Carol, I need to write a cover letter for these jobs. Time out. One size does not fit all. You have to tailor each cover letter to that particular situation. You never say, to whom it may concern. You never say, dear sir or madam. You take the time to find out who you're sending it to. And if that company is so insulated that you cannot find out the name of the person to address it to, then you say recruiter for, you know, loading dock position, recruiter for manager, this recruiter for.
Exactly.
Okay? And then you say dear recruiter, because you don't know. And it's better to do that way than to insult somebody and say, dear sir, when it's a woman that's going to be looking at your resume.
Oh, boy, that's not good.
No, no. But you have to tailor each cover letter to fit the situation. And my utmost preference in cover letters is what we call a T letter. And that's where...
A what?
A T. Is it Tom? T?
Oh, a T letter.
A T letter. A T letter has an opening paragraph basically explaining why you're sending them this recruiter that particular letter. And on one side is what they want. These are the skills you want. These are the skills that these are qualifications you want, qualifications I have, or you can say your requirements,
right.
My qualifications. Okay?
All right.
And then you put those down, and I tell you, the person who's going to review your resume will love you because they can, at a glance, see.
Exactly.
Oh, the other thing is that if you're applying for a position that you've seen listed somewhere or somebody told you, if you have at least 60% of what they're looking for, go ahead and apply. You don't have to have 100% of what they're looking for because in most cases, they will list more things on there than they need. And that's a way of eliminating, it's qualifying people to some degree.
Right.
Okay.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
go ahead.
And one other thing about interviews. Never speak about money. He who speaks first about money... Never speak first, I want to say. But he who speaks first money loses.
Yeah.
All right, excuse me, Sarah.
Yeah.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about being late. I didn't have your number, but I'm here.
All right, I sent it again this morning because I was just saying you are really blessed because normally I don't go on the email. And at 3 a.m., I noticed you send a requesting the number, and I resent it. But thank God you're here.
Okay.
I'll be with you in a minute. Carol?
Yes.
Thank you so much for hanging out to give the extras. And, Carol, I want to introduce you to Cheryl Bouchard, and I just pray that one of these days you both will meet together.
Oh, I would love that. Hello, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Nice to meet you.
So we will connect later, Carol. And thank you so much for eloquently delivering to my audience.
Oh, you're very welcome anytime, and we will reconnect.
Yes, thank
Cheryl,
you.
Cheryl, have a wonderful time.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Cheryl, to the new day.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
A pleasure. It's been a long time I haven't seen the sister. I've been reading about all the wonderful progress that you have made, and I know we met maybe 7 or 8 years or something like that ago at the FraserNet conference, and you are one of the women around financing that I greatly admire because you are really a trailblazer in this arena. So I want Cheryl to take this time and just introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them, please, about your journey and why you have made a life commitment to do what you're doing. And then we are going to go into the four areas that you decide to speak on today. So ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Ms. Cheryl Bouchard.
Well, again, thank you, everyone, for definitely having me on this morning. And a little bit about myself, I started in the financial arena almost 25 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been that long. And the reason, you know, I've always been interested in finance. That was something that I just truly enjoyed it. And when I started working for one of the major brokerage firms, Wall Street firms, which was Dean Witter Reynolds at the time, when I began working for them, what I noticed was that people of color were not, mm-hmm. Were not investing, and they were not learning about how to manage their money. And so mm-hmm. I made it a lifelong commitment that, in particularly, I was going to focus on teaching the people of color, and particularly with women, how to manage
mm-hmm.
their money and how to grow their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm still on this journey of teaching and helping people to understand what they need to do to become, you know, better at managing their money and to become wealthy. And especially right now, you can see the economy is in such a bad place. This is the time
mm-hmm.
that people really need to start to educate themselves much better on what to do with their money.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yes, yes.
There is a myth that people of color, regardless where on the universe you are, they say people of color love to put their money under their mattresses or put it in cans and bury it in the hole. So you are dispelling this myth and giving us the proper channel and blueprint in which to control our finances. And we thank you for that.
Absolutely, yes, yes. We don't want to put our
Perfect.
We don't want to put our money in the mattress or in the coffee can. It doesn't
no, we don't.
It doesn't grow that way.
No. Cheryl, why don't we move into how to handle money?
Okay. Well, right now, as I mentioned earlier, it's a tough economic situation that's going on in the country, actually really in the world. And
yes.
so people today have to really become cautious about how they are handling their money. And the reason for that is because there's no more certainty with anything. There's no certainty that you will still have your job. There's no certainty... You know, there's just a lot of stuff that's going on. And so when there's that uncertainty, the one thing you have to be sure of is that you're putting money away. They call it the rainy day fund. You put it,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that if you do need to tap into something, you have some money there. And so today it's important for people to really start putting money into some form of a savings. And I don't care if you just start off with, you know, $5 a week, just start putting something away every week so that you can start to build up that rainy day fund just in case, you know, you are
right.
laid off. Because, I'm telling you, Daphne, every day I'm literally getting a call or an email from someone who is calling me up or emailing me saying they just got laid off. It's unbelievable. And I think that it's going to get worse before it gets better. So,
yes. And this is why it doesn't, you know, I'm so receptive of what you're saying, because it doesn't matter how much we make. We have to find a means of allowing a little bit to work for us. Cheryl, I think you have a caller, so let me hear what
okay.
the caller has to say.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. You have a question for Cheryl? Good morning, caller. You're on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Good morning, caller. Good morning. You're on the air. All right. So we'll just go back to the conversation. I think they will call. They will call back again.
Okay.
Yes, Cheryl. So I was saying we need to put a little something aside to work for us.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a large amount, but whatever it is, let it work for us while we are still on the jobs and everything.
Exactly. That's so true. And the other thing that people need to really do today is to really make getting out of credit card debt a priority. They need to really
yes.
not use the cards. If you do use it, you know, pay it off within, you know, 30 days. Whatever you purchased, pay that off right away. Don't let the balance keep accumulating, because as you can see right now, And I'm so happy that Obama is watching them closely and going to be putting in, you know, laws and regulations so that these credit card companies are not just, you know, raising the rate that just because of anything. And that's what's been going on. They're raising the rates, and the way it's working, people will never get out of debt, because if they keep raising your interest rate and the finance charge, it just keeps accumulating and building up. So,
yes. I encountered a friend, Cheryl, the other day. She has excellent credit. She pays her bills on time and all of that. And she got one of her credit card bills and realized the interest had gone up. And when she called them, they told her it was the economy. And she said, I've had your card for how many years? I've never been late. So what has the economy has to do with you raising my interest?
Mm-hmm.
So she said, you know, she was just not going to use the card anymore.
Exactly. Yes. And to be honest with you, you know what? She probably could have fought that. And what she should have done, she could have gone, you know, asked for a supervisor. Because I do know of other people who have renegotiated when that happened to them. And they called, they finally got to someone who said, you know, okay, we'll lower it. And so she could probably go back and renegotiate that, and they will probably lower. If you put up enough stink about it, they'll lower.
Yes.
Especially if you've been a good customer, you know, good client.
Over the years.
Right.
And pass a piece of information on to her.
Yeah,
so
do that.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Definitely. So those are two things people have to do today. They got to get out of credit card debt, and they have to put money away in a savings so that they have something to fall back on just in case anything happens.
Okay, thank you. I know, Cheryl, that you also have some recommendation that how we as business owners can make money in our own businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the other that. Oops. You have a caller?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll announce when we do. No, I don't.
Okay. Yes, one of the things that I'm really recommending to people today is that they start to, not only in terms of managing your own cash flow, but also to look at starting a business on the side. People need to, most people need to bring in more money. And so the only way to do that, because most companies are not going to give you a pay raise right now. If anything, they're cutting back, and they're cutting back and freezing pay raises. So you have to find another avenue to make additional income. And you're not, and part-time jobs are not available either. So what else is there to do? So the other thing, only thing people can start to do right now is to look at starting a business on the side. And there's various things that people can do right now. They can, for example, they can, look at their talents. What are they good at? You know, I know a lady right now who is, she makes these fantastic chocolate chip cookies. And we were talking about it, and I said, why don't you start, you know, a little chocolate chip cookie business on the side and start selling. So she started doing that, and she took her cookies to a local restaurant, and they started buying her cookies. And then she went to another place, and like a little coffee shop, and they started buying her cookies. So now she's in business, and she's selling her cookies to all these different, you know, she has like 10 different stores. And, you know, and that's, and she's bringing in additional income. So people need to get really creative and think about, okay, what am I really good at? And how can I turn that into a side business?
Let me ask you a question, Cheryl. Did that lady need to get a food handler's permit from the health department in which to deliver manufacture and deliver these cookies to the local restaurants?
Well, you know what? Initially, she did not have that. But then as she began to grow, I think a lot of people just said, okay, yeah, just bring your cookies in. We'll try it. But now that she's larger,
Right.
So now, so you do have to do your research. You know, you just don't
want
to go out there.
Exactly, and do what is required in your area.
Exactly. So go, and that's, the information is online. You know, you could just, you know, you may need to, I have another friend of mine who was thinking about making peach cobbler, and it was the same thing with him. He was going to, he needed to have a kitchen, so he had to rent a kitchen space. And
a commercial space, yeah.
Exactly, commercial space, so that he could
bake. Most local restaurants would be willing to rent you their space after closing hours.
Yes, exactly.
You probably need your baking at night when they are closed and just clean up for when they are back for breakfast.
Exactly. So it doesn't. People think that it's so complicated, but it's not. You're absolutely right. You're so right. But, yeah, do your research, you know. And then there's other businesses that maybe you don't need, you know, to get food handlers. Let's say you might become a consultant, you know, or, you know. So there's various things that people can start to do. And you know what? Even I tell you what's really growing is the some people don't like this industry, but it's the network marketing industry. It's a growing field, and I know quite a few people who are in network marketing, and they're doing extremely well. You have to work it like a business, but you can.
Exactly, and you just have to find the ones that is above board, because
exactly.
There are some of them there that is underhanded. Just don't go for the get-rich-quick ones, because they're just out for ripping people off.
Right.
Cheryl, I want to give you an opportunity now, because we only have 38 minutes remaining.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give you an opportunity now to tell people about your programs and how they can get in touch with you, and then we will continue with the interview, please.
Okay, great. You can get in touch with me. I have a couple of websites that you can go to. The first one is sisterceobootcamp.com. So SISTERCEOBootcamp, BOOTCAMP.com. And then my other one is Mind, MIND, Your Money, YOURMONEY.TV. So those are two where you can see my programs. And it's, you know, I just talk about, you know, money, and I have how to start your own business. All kinds of things that people can see on my website.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for
You're
that.
Welcome.
All right. Do you have any other insight you want to share on how to make money? You know, you talk about starting business, find your talents, your creativity, and utilize that. But the wise thing to do is to start it on the side. Do you have any other insight there? If not, we'll move into credit management.
Okay. Well, we touched a little bit on that. The other thing I would say about, you know, making money, this is a time for people to look at real estate. Believe it or not, people are maybe afraid of the real estate, but it actually is, there's some really great bargains out there. And
yes, that's what last night at our business group at church.
Okay.
We had a local realtor was presenting, and she was talking about the boom in the short sale section of the real estate now, and people are really investing.
Yes.
Those who have money to invest, yes.
Right. And see, and that's the key, is that, you know, that's why you always want to have money set aside, because when you have the money, then you can take advantage of the different opportunities that are out there. And there's always going to be opportunities. I can tell you, like right now, Donald Trump is probably buying up a lot of real estate right now, because he's...
And Robert Kiyosaki.
And Robert Kiyosaki, yes, because they're able to buy it at such a low price. You know, so that's why, you know, people need to look at least do some research, start to educate yourself on the different types of real estate that is available and the different types of opportunities. Even the stock market is even a good place to start investing, because there's a lot of good stocks that have really dropped in price, and the companies are still in good shape. It's just that the stock market has dropped. And so there's great bargains. So as long as you have long-term outlook, meaning that, you know, you can hang on to it for a year or 2 years, you can still invest fine, and you still could be making, you know, leave it there and make some money.
Decent money.
Yeah.
Cheryl, you've been in business for a number of years, and I'm sure you have seen so many different results happening and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know women, and I can speak about that because that's the costume I wear. We are fearful in collaborating with other people to invest. What is your teaching on that?
Fearful of what?
Collaborating.
Oh, collaboration,
to invest. I know men put together and they want to do a little thing because one have a little and the other have a little, and they will work on different things together.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on that? Do you recommend it or what?
I do recommend it. I think it's one of the best things that women should do. We should, and I always talk about this. I say women should come together and form investment clubs. You can invest in different things. You can invest in the stock market. You could invest in real estate. You could pull your money together and do so much more. And I think the reason why people do not do it is because they don't understand how to do it. I think that's the problem. I think we're just not educated enough. And so, therefore, they don't really understand how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think but it's a wonderful thing to do if women will come together and put their money. I mean, just think about it. Let's say, for example, if we all came together and we bought up a lot of real estate right now, we could create a real estate investment club. Everyone has to put in, let's say, $2,000. So if you've got 20 people putting in $2,000, that's $40,000. So you could leverage that and buy a ton of property.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. So I think people just need to know how to do it.
Right. And one of the other things too that I think is preventing us from doing that is the trust factor. We as a people don't trust each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's our early upbringing or everything is that, you know, people are programmed to hold on to what is theirs and, I don't want to put with nobody. They're going to rip me off and they're going to do that. So we need to start trusting each other.
I agree. And, yes, that does go back to how we were raised. I think a lot of people, money is very emotional for most people.
Oh, yeah, it makes and breaks friendships and families and everything, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's how you were raised. And so if you were raised, a lot of people were raised fearing money. I would say probably 80% of people today are raised fearing money. And that's why you only have like, you know, 1% of the country of the rich people, you know, 1% of the population are the wealthy, because, you know, everyone really is raised to fear money. We've been taught, oh, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. You know, who do you think
money
I am?
Is the root of all
evil. Exactly. Mm. So we keep hearing that message over and over again, and that's what creates the distrust. And it creates distrust. So you're right. So it's important that when you're creating these investment clubs that you have to try to find people who are similar to you and think very similar that you think.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I mean, I tell people you need to interview people before. Don't let anybody come into your club.
That's right.
You know,
That's
you
right.
interview them first.
Exactly, exactly. And the beauty about it is that it's never too late, because with people like you who are committed to teaching us and to making sure we can avail ourselves of this information and knowledge,
mm-hmm.
we can acquire the knowledge and start.
Yes.
Just from where we are. And it's okay to start small
mm-hmm.
and grow.
Yes.
Start small and grow.
Yeah, you don't have to start with a lot of money. I mean, I know of investment clubs that just start with maybe $50 a month. And
mm-hmm.
and they're putting in into this pot, and then they're investing in, you know, the stock market or something else. I mean, I even know one investment club that invested in a play. So there's
mm-hmm.
there's so many different things that people can do right now. And also it's a way to learn too, because as you're in this club, you're learning, you know, you're being educated. A lot of times you'll have speakers come to your club and talk about the various types of investments. So you're learning at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's why it's
mm-hmm.
I encourage women to start an investment club or at least join an investment club. It's a wonderful
yes.
thing. Yes.
And the beauty based on the very limited information or knowledge that I have, everyone in the investment clubs does not necessarily need to have the same skill set, because we can learn as we go along. The important
yes.
thing is that we avail of ourselves to the information.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
And because there are so many people. I think an investment club is like building a power team for your business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. If you are the smartest one in that team, then you need to get a new team.
That
because
is correct.
Your team is supposed to be smarter than you.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. And,
yes.
and oftentimes what I've found that really works is, you're right, you should get people with different experience, you know, so you may
mm-hmm.
have you may have an attorney, you may have an accountant in your group, so you get people who have different experiences, and then they can, you know, you don't need to hire outside people to do anything for you because you have
right.
everyone right there in the group.
Exactly.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I encourage that. People should do that. But, again, you're right, the trust factor. You know, you got to
yes.
start trusting. We have to start trusting each other a lot
each
more.
Other.
Mm-hmm.
Each other.
Yeah.
Because
if we don't, we're not going to get it. It's too hard. I'm going to tell you something, Daphne. It's very hard to build wealth on your own. It's really hard.
Yes.
You can't do everything by yourself.
No. There's nothing we can do by ourselves. We
no.
all need somebody else. I mean, the time of Lone Ranger is gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody out there that can do anything by themselves. I don't care what you've been thought, or that we all need somebody else. The people who are trying to do it by themselves are the people who are continually being burnt out.
Yeah.
And cannot make a progress. We have to find somebody to collaborate with and to embrace and add value to. That's the bottom line.
Yes.
Cheryl, we have 26 minutes remaining.
Okay.
And we want to go into your financial blueprint for success.
Yes. And what a financial blueprint is basically a financial plan. And here's what I have found, Daphne. Most people do not have a financial plan. They don't have any. They don't have, like, goals that they've written down. They don't know how much money they actually have. They don't know what their net worth is. They don't know how much their debt is, and they don't know what their assets are. And so, you know, it's like anything in life. In order, if you want to achieve certain things, you have to have a plan. You know, you have.
That's right.
And I tell people, you have to look at your life and your money like you are a business. And so, if you were running a business,
you wouldn't just run a business without having a plan. So so you should not run your money or your life like that.
You need
to have a plan, and it has to be written down. And so the, to start the plan, the first thing I have people do is I have them write out, okay, what are your 30-day, what are your 60-day, what are your 90-day, what are your 6-month and your 12-month, 3 years, 5-year, 10-year goals? I have people write all of that down to start off with, okay, now what do you want to achieve within the next 30 days? Maybe it's to pay off one of your credit cards. Or what do you want to achieve in the next 12 months? Maybe it's to, you know, be debt-free or to start a new business. So you have to know what it is you want to achieve. So that's the first part of the financial plan. And once you get that down, then what we start to do is we start to look at the goals and we plan everything based on those goals. We look because we want to get to the end result. So what is it going to take for us to pay off that credit card within the next 6 months? Okay, then we let's say if it's, you know, $500, then that means that within the next 6 months, we know that you need to pay $83 a month to pay that off. So so we break everything down. So then you can see, okay, right, okay, I need to do this. So because then you have a formula that you're working with. You look at your financial blueprint, you open it up, you look at the pages, you go, okay, this month I got to do this. This month, next month I have to do that. And that's what people need to do in their lives. They need to have a financial blueprint, which is basically a financial plan.
Because what most of us have been doing is just looking at the big picture.
Yes.
And we never get started. It's
yes.
like they say you can eat an elephant, but you can only do it one bite at a time.
That's right.
And what this plan does for us is break it down into bite-sized pieces where we can look and see. And I know with this plan, something that would work very good for me is a little reward system.
Mm-hmm.
Every time as I finish the 30 day, I would reward myself. It doesn't have to be anything expensive or extravagant, but just to help me to go towards the 60 day.
Yes.
Because I have accomplished something. So each person need to find out what it would take for them to complete and maintain this plan.
I agree. And it could be something really small. It could be something like maybe buy a book or a magazine or, you know, maybe it's a lipstick or, you know, something that's not very expensive.
Or a manicure or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Just a little something for you.
Right.
That makes you, for the guys who are listening, yes, men can go and get their manicures too.
They sure can. But I think that's a wonderful idea. Because what happens if you don't reward yourself, then you'll give it up quickly. You'll say, "Oh, this."
Oh yes.
Yeah. So you need the reward, and also, I was going to say the other thing I would do is what I have found that is really helpful. If you're not married, you know, first of all, if you're married, you and your spouse need to come together on doing this. Then you need to do this financial blueprint together. But if you're not married, one of the things I recommend is that you get a money buddy. And it could be a girlfriend or a guy friend, and you all do this together, and it kind of helps to motivate you. You get, you know, you encourage each other. And you know, maybe you can once a month you come together and you talk about your finances and you share what's going on and what your concerns are and what you're doing differently. And it really helps. It's like having the mastermind. Have you ever read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill?
Oh, yes.
And if you remember the chapter, he talks about the mastermind. And so that's why the investment clubs and having a money buddy is so good. because it acts like a mastermind. So it's just not you. You're able to talk to other people, and then you
yes.
come up with different ideas because you
exactly.
can't
and
you can't think of everything.
Yeah, because that's kind of what your power team or your inner circle is really your mastermind group.
Exactly.
That pushes you to stretch.
Exactly.
Because that's what your mastermind group does for you. Cheryl, we have 20 minutes, 19 minutes remaining.
Uh-huh.
I have a question for you. For people who are maybe looking to go into intimate relationships,
mm-hmm.
what are some money conversations we need to begin having? You know, I'm saying we because I'm single, so.
Okay, so you're saying if you're going to have a conversation with you want to have what kind of relationship?
If people who are entering into
oh.
an intimate relationship,
yes.
what are some money conversations they need to begin having in these relationships and at what stage?
Yes, one of the things that people should talk about before they become married for sure. Is they talk about money. They need to find out, okay, how much debt do you have, and
uh-huh.
how much money do you make? You know, this really you need to lay everything out on the table, and people need to see everything because you don't want to have any surprises when
right.
you know when you're all of a sudden you see, oh my gosh, you know this person filed bankruptcy. I didn't know that, and
uh-huh.
you know I even tell people. You should pull your credit reports and
mm-hmm.
let so people can see what is actually on there. Because what if, you know, you guys want to go and buy a house together and
mm-hmm.
then you find out that, you know, they didn't pay off their college debt or something. So people
mm-hmm.
should not have any secrets when it comes to money in the beginning stages. And I know a lot of women are afraid to talk about money to their spouses or to their
yep.
soon-to-be spouses.
Yeah.
And
significant,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
significant others. They're afraid, and I always say, do not be afraid, and you have to talk about it because I've seen many marriages and relationships break up because of the fact that they did not discuss money ahead of time.
Yeah, some of the other things people that I know struggle with. I know women who. Date men or enter into relationship with men who financially are not earning as much as the women are,
mm-hmm.
and they say, well, oh, I don't want him to know how much I own because how much I earn because he's probably going to end the relationship. And I say, but you need to say no because eventually. When he find out, he's going to be ending it anyhow. So why not just open up now and do it?
I
because
agree.
Before long, the truth is going to come out.
Yes. Yeah, I don't understand that. That doesn't make sense. That does not. You have to tell people. That's why I say no secrets because eventually it comes out. It always comes out.
Yeah, because what they say, whatever is done in the dark, we'll see light one day.
Exactly.
And it's going to see light at a time when you ain't ready for it to see light. So you
That's,
might as well just put it in the light and you know, shed some light on it.
Yes,
we have
I agree. 16,
we have 16 minutes remaining. How would you love to close this interview?
You can gather
some closing thoughts and points that you want to leave us with, please, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would really want to emphasize today is that people really begin to look at their money seriously. I mean, sit down. Look. Don't be afraid to look at your credit card statements, look at your bank statements, look at your 401k or your retirement statements, and put everything down on paper. I really want to encourage people to have a financial plan and really focus on how are they going to build wealth this next year, this next 3 years, the next 5 years. Because the one thing that people of color in particular don't do is they don't really plan and leave a financial legacy for their children and their families. And that is so important. So, you know, even like have estate planning, you know, where you have a will and you have trust, all of those things need to be in place. And that's all a part of the financial blueprint. When you have, we talk about insurance, you make sure you have enough insurance, you make sure you have enough a will, you make sure you have, if you're have a lot of property, you have a trust so you can protect your assets so that you make sure it goes to your children or to your grandchildren, you know, to help them with their college or with education. You know, we need to be able to have wealth that we can pass on, and so it continues to grow our legacy, our family legacy. So really, the points I'm really trying to make here is that, you know, building your wealth is today has to be a priority. It has to be a priority.
Exactly.
And managing, and like you said earlier, it's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep. So how much are you keeping? You know, today you can't afford to buy stuff that you don't need. If you don't need to have, 100 pair of black shoes, you already have. They're all black,
Yes.
You got to get away.
What shade of black are you wearing today?
Exactly. you don't need to have a lot of stuff. Look at your life and look at your closets. And, in fact, we all have too much stuff in our houses. Start selling that stuff off and bringing in some extra money. You could sell on eBay or sell it in the, in the newspaper or on Craigslist. There's ways you can sell stuff to get or have a garage sale. I had a girlfriend of mine who had a garage sale, and she made $1,000 in one day from a garage sale.
Wow.
I know.
What was she selling, antiques?
No, believe it or not. She was just selling dishes and pots and old purses, old handbags. Can you believe it? She was selling some of her old purses. She had a lot of purses. And women were buying her purses. I think she made like $300 to $400 just on handbags.
Wow.
So, look at your clothes, your shoes. If you have a lot of shoes and stuff, you'd be surprised people will buy that stuff. So you can, this weekend, you can set up a garage sale possibly and bring in an extra $1,000. So that's why I'm saying the opportunities are out there. You just need to become creative and figure out how to, bring in some additional income.
Because they say one person's junk is another person's treasure, right?
That's true. That is so true. Yes, it's very, very true. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead. We have
12 minutes.
Go ahead. I look at the time and realize we have 11 minutes. That's good. We're doing good.
Yeah.
A lot can be done in 11 minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't ask you a question pertaining to children.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of money dialogue you think parents should be having with their children now, especially if they've been laid off and all of that?
Mm-hmm. The one thing that's a good question, and the one thing that you do not want to do is to scare children and make them feel bad, especially if, someone has been laid off. But what you do need to have a conversation with them and let them know that, there's not as much money might be coming in, and then so there's certain things that you're not going to be able to purchase right now. And you have to be careful with the words that you use. Like, I would not say we cannot afford that. Don't say that. Because see, that's the kind of stuff that lingers in young children's minds, and it will
damage them for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. So you got to be really careful of how you talk about it. And so you say things like, you know, right now is not a good time. We're not going to purchase this right now because there are certain things that we have to prioritize. You can use the words like we have to prioritize, and right now that's not what we're going to purchase. So, but let them know. You really do need to let children know up front about what is going on. I really tell parents to do that. Don't hide it.
Especially black parents, because we always try to keep everything in secret from the children.
Yeah.
Like we saving them. And children need to know. I mean, all of us are guilty of that as parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think we see the damage that we are doing to the children, but we need to include them in the conversations.
Yeah.
Because children understand more than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They really do. And they're they're resilient, and they can handle more than we think that they can handle. They can handle a lot. But we just need to be truthful with them. And also,
Exactly. Also,
if you learn, when you teach them how to manage, you know, if you're learning how to manage your own money and you're teaching them, when they get older, they'll understand how to manage their money. So they'll say, okay, like, you know, for example, I always tell parents, you know, tell your children that, you know, saving 10% of your income is one of the best things that they can do. And so if you help them to teach them that, you know, start saving your money now. I know a lot of parents who have young children. In fact, I was talking to someone not long ago, and she was telling me that her 9-year-old son or grandson he's a great saver. And she's been teaching him about saving money. He's even investing in the stock market. He's been buying stocks with his own money. You know, he gets like money from his grandparents
or maybe
birthdays and holidays. And so he doesn't go out and buy toys with it. He saves his money, and then he's been learning how to invest. So he's at 9. So imagine what he'll be able to do when he becomes an adult. He will already know.
Exactly. He's going to be a good husband for somebody.
That's right.
I'm too old, boy.
Exactly.
No, Cheryl, I want to piggyback on something you said about the conversation we use with children. I had a guest on a couple weeks ago on the show, and we had a conversation around that same thing. She has a dear friend, and she said whenever they go over to visit friends or anything, and somebody would offer him something to eat, he would gracefully refuse. And she said, Daphne, I know he's hungry because we coming from the same place. He was crying hunger before we leave. Now somebody offer good food, and he refused. And then she watched it for a period, and then she had to get clarity on it, so she asked him. And way back in his childhood, he always recalled the father saying how difficult it is to buy food, he's not earning enough money and everything. And he always felt that it was because he was the teenage boy. He was eating too much food. And this man, I think, is in his 40s or something, and this still lingers on him, with him. So we can really damage our children. So we need to be selective as to the language we use with them.
Yes, absolutely. I know a lady, here's a similar type story. I know a lady who is right now 65 years old, and she has she has difficulty with handling her own money. And so when I talked to her, I said, okay, well, what happened in your childhood that affected the way you handle money? And she said, well, the only thing I can think of is that when I was a little girl, you know, she was coming up during the Depression era, her parents didn't have the money to pay to pay the bills. And so she said the bill collectors would come to the call up or they go to the door, and their parents would make her answer the phone and tell them that we don't have any money. She was 10 years old. And,
oh, Lord.
Yes. So she would. So if a bill collector called up, she would pick up the phone and say, "We don't have any money." Or if they came to the door, she answered the door and she would say, "We don't have any money." So that lingers. So here she's 65 right now.
Wow.
So 55 years later, she's still, she has a very difficult time with handling her money right now, even today.
Wow,
because
this is powerful.
It's very powerful. Yes.
Ooh, Sharon, 2 minutes you have.
This has been
how
so
great. How do you
great.
Want to tie up? Oh, yes. I have to have you back, so make sure you keep that phone number close by.
I will. I will definitely keep it close by, and I would love to come back.
I would love to have you back.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to be in Atlanta this year?
No, I'm not. I have another engagement that's going to be conflicting, so this time I'm not going to be there. So are you going to be speaking?
I don't know yet. I haven't gotten any information from Joel, so
okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know yet. Yeah, but how do you want to tie up your session here?
Well, you know, Daphne, I just want to say, first of all, you're doing a great job by having this fabulous show and because
thanks.
You're educating
you.
People, and I'm proud of you as well because you are still, just like me, you're on a mission to educate
yes.
and to empower.
Yes.
I mean, and I love
yes.
your tagline, you are the queen of the empowered soul.
Yes, and it's amazing what relationship does. I can't even take the credit for that one.
Oh, really?
I network with this man in England.
Uh-huh.
And we talk and we communicate and all that stuff. And we were talking about how we could add value to each other.
Yes.
And he sent that back and he said, you know, I don't know if you realize that you are the queen of the empowered soul.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
I said, God, that's it.
Wow.
I said, that is it.
That is it. I love it.
That
and I went, yeah, yes. And it's catchy and I just think it's fantastic. So, you know, what you're doing is also fantastic. And I just want to say that and, you know, continue to do what you're doing, and because people need this information right now, people need to feel empowered right now. They don't feel very empowered right now because of what is going on. People feel like they don't have any control over their life anymore. They're losing their jobs. They lost 50% of their retirement plan. A lot of people feel like they're not going to be able to ever retire, and because they've lost so much money, and so. We just got to keep educating people. The thing I want to tell people is that you've got to continue to educate yourself. And you never stop learning on anything.
Never stop learning. And
anything.
With your teaching and my commitment, we will make more than we have ever seen in the lifetime that we have. Cheryl, I want to thank you so much for being such a wonderful role model and friend for me. And I just want to encourage you to keep doing God's work. You're welcome. And for those of you who sign in and listen to us, I want to tell you, remember, you have a destiny. I want you to follow your destiny. Don't let God bless you. Our morning at the same time on www.blogtalkradio.com broadcasting out of Brooklyn. Bye, Cheryl. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Will do. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let me know what's the plight that you've called me to.
the thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.